Hello, welcome to Science TLDR. Today we're really opening the files on a massive study, one that uses the absolute cutting edge of spatial biology to map the whole ecosystem of a pretty devastating cancer.
Yeah, we're diving into this incredibly detailed high-dimensional spatial biology study. It gives us really the first comprehensive single-cell architectural map of the Merkel cell carcinoma MCC tumor microenvironment.
And the title really reflects that complexity, doesn't it?
It does. It's spatially organized inflammatory myeloid CD8 plus T-cell aggregates linked to Merkel cell polyomavirus-driven reorganization of the tumor microenvironment. Quite a mouthful.
That paper comes from NIMIP 2025.06.657162v1.pdf. Now, for anyone maybe less familiar with MCC, give us the quick rundown.
Sure. It's a highly aggressive neuroendocrine skin cancer. And crucially, it comes in two main types that, look identical under the microscope.
Right. Morphologically identical.
Exactly. So you've got virus-positive MCC, or VP-MCC. That one's driven by the Merkel cell polyomavirus, MCPYV. And then there's virus-negative MCC, VN-MCC. That's usually linked to UV-induced DNA damage, and it tends to have a really high mutational burden.
And historically, there's been this kind of paradox, right? The virus-positive patients, VP-MCC, they actually tend to do better survival.
That's right, which is counterintuitive sometimes. You think virus, you think complication, but here it correlated with better outcomes.
So that's the puzzle they're tackling. Why would having a virus on board lead to a better prognosis? The field suspected the immune system was key, obviously.
Yeah, the immune response.
But we've always lacked that that really high-resolution spatial context to see how the virus is actually remodeling the tumor microenvironment, the TME.
Precisely. So the mission here wasn't just counting cells. It was about mapping the cellular and transcriptional landscapes across, I think, 60 MCC patients.
60, yeah.
To really understand how MCPYV spatially shapes, orchestrates the immune response, and then connect those specific spatial signatures to patient outcomes. Like, does where the cells are matter?
Okay, so let's unpack the toolkit needed for that.
Uh-huh.
Because, traditional methods like slow cytometry or just bulk sequencing, they basically grind up the tumor, right? You lose all the geography.
You lose everything spatial, yeah.
So why was this kind of multimodal spatial approach the only way to really answer this question?
Because context is just absolutely everything in cancer immunology. Think about it. If you have, say, 100 T cells, it makes a world of difference whether they're just scattered randomly, sort of floating around.
Right.
Or if they're packed together right up against the tumor edge, maybe talking to specific types of macrophages. That location, that neighborhood, is critical.
So you need to see who's talking to whom and where.
Exactly. So to capture that, they used this this impressive stack of technologies.
Tell us about the stack. What do they actually deploy?
Okay, so they combined CODEX multiplex imaging.
Which lets you see lots of proteins at once in place.
Yeah, dozens of protein markers on single cells right there in situ in the tissue slice. Mm. Then they layered on RNAscope, which does the same for RNA molecules, again, in situ.
Right.
And then the really targeted bit, laser capture microdissection guided sequencing, or LCMSEC.
So they can basically go in with a tiny laser, cut out a specific neighborhood they just identified.
Precisely. Cut out that exact microenvironment and then do deep sequencing just on those cells. So you know the cell type, its proteins, its location, and its detailed transcriptional state.
That is just a phenomenal level of detail. Okay, so they apply this toolkit. What's the first big thing that jumps out when they just split the tumors based on virus status, VP versus VN?
Well, they confirmed, huge heterogeneity in both types, which wasn't unexpected.
Right.
But the really stark differences were in the immune and stromal compartments, VP-MCC, the virus-positive ones, significantly enriched for immune effector cells, lots more CD8 plus T cells, the main killer cells, and also plasma cells, which make antibodies.
Okay, so VP is immunologically hotter in that sense.
Yeah.
And the VN-MCC, the UV-driven type.
That one was defined more by its stroma, its sort of structural scaffolding. It had a much higher abundance of stromal cells, especially those cancer-associated fibroblasts, or CFs.
Ah, CFs, often linked to bad outcomes, right? They can get a wall off the tumor.
Exactly. So right away, you see these fundamentally different organizing principles based on the viral driver. But digging into those T cells in VPMCC was particularly interesting.
How so? They weren't just more numerous.
No, it wasn't just numbers. They showed higher levels of cytotoxicity markers, things like granzyme B, meaning they're armed and ready to kill. But they also had really high expression of immune checkpoint molecules, PD-1, LAG-3, TIM-3.
Okay, wait. So they're activated, ready to go, but also showing markers we usually associate with T-cell exhaustion, that PD-1i, LAG-3 high phenotype. What does that mean here?
It's a fascinating profile. It really connects VPMCC to what we see in chronic viral infections.
Yeah.
That sort of exhaustion profile might not mean they're useless or anergic here. Instead, it probably represents the state of, like, highly engaged but constantly regulated cytotoxic response. They're actively fighting the virus in the tumor, but the checkpoints are also being engaged, maybe dampening the response to prevent too much damage, or maybe the tumor is exploiting it. It's active, but throttled.
Which brings us squarely to the spatial architecture.
Mm-hmm.
If these cells aren't just randomly distributed, how did the researchers actually define the functional layout, the geography of this tumor ecosystem?
Right, so they moved beyond single cells to look at functional groups. They called them cellular neighborhoods, or CNs.
Okay.
Basically, using a k-nearest neighbors approach on the imaging data, they identified groups of cells that are consistently found close together, interacting spatially.
Like little communities within the tumor.
Exactly, little functional units. And the key finding here for the T-cells in VPMCC was that their infiltration wasn't uniform at all. It was very spatially restricted.
Okay, restricted where? Where were these killer T-cells actually setting up shop?
They were highly enriched in two main neighborhoods, CN1, which is the immediate tumor boundary, the invasive front.
Right at the edge.
Right at the edge. And CN2, which was a neighborhood particularly rich in myeloid cells.
Ah, okay. Myeloid cells like macrophages and dendritic cells, the sort of immune sentinels and antigen presenters.
Precisely. So this tells you the important immune action isn't just happening somewhere in the tumor. It's being staged right at that critical interface, the battlefront. And it looked like the myeloid cells might be the ones organizing it.
Okay, so let's zoom in on those myeloid cells in the VP tumors. What were they like? What phenotype was the virus driving in them?
They were distinctively inflammatory. Specifically, they were characterized as being CXCL9 positive, PD-L1 positive, and HLA-DR positive macrophages and dendritic cells. Very activated, very involved in antigen presentation and potentially T-cell recruitment.
And crucially, where were they located?
Predominantly co-localized with those CD8 plus T cells, right there at the invasive front, mainly within CN1, CN2, and CN3. They're right there together.
Okay, so we've got the right cells, killer T cells, and inflammatory myeloid cells packed together in the right place, the invasive front. But proximity isn't proof of interaction. What's the actual mechanism? What's the sort of biochemical handshake showing they're functionally linked? How did the virus pull the T cells in?
Right. This was, I think, the real aha moment in the paper. It moved beyond just describing the geography. They used this really neat, novel distance-based metric to actually quantify receptor ligand engagement in situ.
So they could estimate how much signaling was happening between adjacent cells?
Essentially, yes. They looked at pairs like PD-L1 on one cell and PD-1 on a nearby cell. And while VPMCC did show, as expected, higher PD-L1 engagement with PD-1 plus cells consistent with that throttled T-cell phenotype,
yeah,
the defining chemical signal, the really enriched interaction pair in VPMCC, was CXCL9 on the myeloid cells engaging with CXCR3 on the T-cells.
CXCL9, CXCR3, that's a classic chemokine axis. CXCL9 is a potent chemotractant specifically for activated T-cells expressing CXCR3.
Exactly. So this provides a beautiful mechanistic model. The MCPYV infection seems to push the myeloid cells towards the specific inflammatory phenotype, making them pump out CXCL9.
Like little beacons.
Precisely. Functioning as beacons, broadcasting this come here signal that spatially recruits those CXCR3 positive cytotoxic CD8 plus T cells right to the tumor boundary where the myeloid cells are waiting. That localized immune scaffolding built by the virus-infected myeloid cells seems to be the unique defining feature of these VP tumors.
Okay, that's an incredibly elegant model. Virus infects cells, myeloid cells get inflamed, they produce CXCL9. CXCL9 pulls in killer T cells to the front line. Now the crucial question, what does this mean for the patient? How strongly did this specific VP-driven immune architecture actually correlate with clinical outcomes like survival?
Very strongly, especially for early-stage disease. They confirmed that VP-MCC status itself was an independent predictor of prolonged distant metastasis-free survival, or DMFS.
DMFS, okay. Yeah. So having this organized immune response at the boundary helps prevent the cancer from spreading.
It seems so, particularly in stage 1 and 2 patients. That spatially organized immune activity appears to act like a containment field, reducing the risk of distant mets.
And specifically, was it just having the virus, or was it the result of the virus, the T-cell infiltration?
It was strongly linked to the T-cell infiltration. High CD8 plus T cell density, especially within CN3, which was a T cell enriched neighborhood itself, was associated with a lower risk of metastasis.
Okay, so if VP status and high T cells in the right spots are good, who was in the high risk group for metastasis?
The high risk signature was almost the mirror image. It was defined by being VNMCC, the virus negative type, having low CD8 plus T cell infiltration and enrichment of a specific adverse spatial context.
It was.
The interception of CN9, that neighborhood we mentioned earlier, the one dominated by cancer-associated fibroblasts, CAFs, intersecting directly with the tumor boundary, CN1. So having those CTAS piled up right at the invasive front, that was powerfully associated with worse outcomes with a higher risk of metastasis.
That makes sense. CCAFs creating that sort of fibrotic immune suppressive barrier right where the tumor might try to escape.
Exactly. Now, before we get to therapy implications, I think it's really important to highlight the validation work they did. This whole model of virus-driven spatial immunomodulation. It wasn't just an MCC thing, was it?
No, and that's huge. They looked at another virus-associated cancer, right?
Yes, HPV-positive oropharyngeal squamous cell carcinoma, or OPSCC, head and neck cancer. And remarkably, they found a very similar pattern.
So HPV-positive OPSCC looked like VPMCC.
Pretty much. Enriched CD8 plus T cells, inflammatory myeloid cells expressing things like IDO1, PD-L1, and importantly, CXCL9, again concentrated right at the invasive front in their equivalent of CN1 and CN2.
Incredible. And the flip side, HPV negative OPSCC.
Mirrored VNMCC, characterized by CCAF enrichment right at that invasive front and associated with worse outcomes. This really suggests there might be this conserved, spatially organized anti-tumor immune mechanism that's common across different types of virus-associated cancers.
Potentially defining a whole class of cancers based on how a virus sculpts the immune geography. Okay, so this spatial understanding, it should have big implications for how we treat more advanced disease, right?
Cool.
With things like immune checkpoint blockade, ICB therapy.
Absolutely. You'd think, based on the DMFS data, that VPMCC patients with their pre-existing organized immune response would respond much better to ICB drugs like anti-PD-1.
That would be the logical assumption.
Yeah.
But is that what they found? This is where it gets really interesting, I think. Did viral status predict ICB response in advanced MCC?
Surprisingly, no. This was a critical finding. The response to ICB, which they measured by progression-free survival, PFS, in patients with advanced NCC, it turned out to be independent of whether the tumor was VP or VN.
Wait, hold on. So the very thing, the viral status and its associated TME that strongly predicted whether the cancer would metastasize early on, that doesn't predict whether the patient will respond to immunotherapy later.
Exactly. A fundamental split in predictive power. The initial driver, virus versus UV, sets up a distinct early stage risk profile, but the requirements for successful response to ICB therapy seem to be different and shared across both types.
Okay, so if it wasn't the virus, what molecular or spatial features did predict a good, durable response to ICB therapy in these advanced patients?
The predictive features were shared across both VP and VN patients, so the underlying biology needed for ICB to work seems conserved. Key features included the enrichment of a specific type of T cell, the central memory CD8 plus T cells, CD8 T centimeter.
Ah, the memory cells, not just the exhausted effectors.
Right. Specifically, a subset marked by TCF17. These cells are known for their ability to self-renew and sustain a long-term immune response, which is exactly what you want from ICB.
And spatially, where did these critical CD8 T centimeter cells need to be? Was it just about having them or where they lived?
Location mattered again. Response was linked to the presence of B-cell enriched CN4 and CN5 in their analysis. And even more specifically, spatial context that physically resembled tertiary lymphoid structures, or TLS.
TLS. Those organized immune aggregates that can form in tissues during chronic inflammation or cancer. Mm. Almost like mini lymph nodes right in the tumor.
Exactly like mini lymph nodes. And when they used LC-MSeq to profile these TLS-like regions.
The laser capture again.
Yeah, they confirmed transcriptional signatures typical of TLS formation. Things like IGHG3 from B cells, CD79A, and chemokines like CCL19, CCL21, CXCL13 that are involved in organizing these structures. So having that organized B cell and T cell context, that TLS-like scaffolding, seemed crucial for ICB to work effectively, regardless of whether the tumor started as VP or VN.
Okay, so this paints a clearer picture for therapy. We have this favorable context, CD8 TCNE cells within TLS-like structures predicting ICB success. But what about the adverse features? You mentioned that CF-enriched neighborhood, CA9, was bad for metastasis. Did it also predict ICB failure?
It did, and it was often part of a specific detrimental motif. Remember, CA9 was CF-enriched. They also identified CN8, which was vessel-enriched.
Blood vessel.
Right. And when you had the intersection of the CAF neighborhood, CN9, and the vessel neighborhood, CN8, particularly right at the tumor boundary, CN1, that created what they called a fibrovascular motif.
Fibrovascular. So fibrotic tissue mixed with blood vessels.
Exactly. And this specific spatial context, this fibrovascular barrier at the tumor edge, was linked to both a high risk of metastasis and early stage disease and failure to respond to ICB in advanced disease.
So it's like a double whammy. It helps the tumor spread and it blocks the therapy later.
It seems to represent a common mechanism of therapeutic resistance and immune exclusion across both VP and VN subtypes. It likely forms a physical barrier, dense and fibrotic, maybe hindering T-cell penetration, maybe affecting drug delivery through those associated vessels. It walls off the tumor effectively.
So that CAF-driven fibrovascular context emerges as this sort of common enemy, regardless of the initial viral status, predicting poor outcomes across the board.
Absolutely. It really ties things together. You have VP and VN starting with distinct TMEs that lead to different risks of early metastasis. But when it comes to responding to ICB later, they converge. Success depends on shared features like CD8 T centimeters and TLS structures, while failure is strongly associated with this shared adverse feature, the fibrovascular motif at the boundary.
It provides such a clear roadmap, doesn't it? Potential biomarkers for stratifying patients, are they likely to metastasize? Are they likely to respond to ICB? And potential therapeutic targets maybe disrupt that fibrovascular barrier.
Definitely. The findings offer both molecular and, crucially, spatial biomarkers. And yes, targeting that fibrovascular niche seems like a very rational next step.
This study is just monumental. The sheer amount of data, mapping millions of cells and making it publicly available.
Yeah.
It really gives us a blueprint.
It really does. Of course, while it establishes these incredibly strong spatial correlates, the next big step is functional validation. You know, using in vivo models to actually show that if you disrupt that CAF boundary interaction, you can reverse immune exclusion and improve outcomes.
Which leads us perfectly to our final provocative thought for you, the listener. Think about this. We see this incredibly strong link between the CAF and ARIA boundary context, that fibrovascular motif, and poor outcomes, both metastasis and ICB failure. So what specific functional experiments are now most urgently needed to really nail down how those CAFs are blocking the immune response at that boundary?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps more excitingly, how close are we realistically to maybe combining standard ICB, like anti-PD-L1, with a drug that specifically targets that CAF barrier, maybe something hitting TGF-beta, which is often involved in fibrosis? Could that combination become a new standard, maybe even an adjuvant therapy, specifically for this high-risk group identified by their spatial signature? What would it take to get there? Lots to think about.
And just to crystallize the main findings from this deep dive, here are the three major takeaways from the results.
Okay, takeaway number one. Viral immunomodulation is spatially restricted. The Merkel cell polyomavirus, MCPYV, actively drives the polarization and, importantly, the spatial confinement of specific inflammatory myeloid cells, those CXCL9 positive, PD-L1 positive ones, right to the tumor's invasive front.
Yeah.
And this directly correlates with pulling in more killer CD8 plus T cells specifically to that location in the VPMCC tumors.
Takeaway number two, predictors of metastasis. For early stage MCC, being virus positive and having high CD8 plus T cell infiltration, especially in those organized neighborhoods near the boundary, predicts better survival specifically, longer time without distant metastasis, DMFS. Conversely, having that enrichment of cancer-associated fibroblasts right at the tumor boundary, that CN1-CN9 interface, is a shared spatial red flag for worse DMFS, particularly in the VNMCC group.
And finally, takeaway three. Predictors of ICB response are viral status independent. This was the big surprise. Responding well to immune checkpoint blockade therapy later on isn't actually linked to whether the tumor was virus positive or negative. Instead, it depends on shared spatial features present in both types. Specifically, having those durable central memory CD8 plus T cells, CD8 T-centimeter, and having organized B-cell enriched areas that look and function like tertiary lymphoid structures, TLS, those seem to be the key ingredients for successful immunotherapy response.
Thank you for joining us for Science TLDR.